We have a couple new sponsors in 2018. Rob Dukansky of RE/MAX First Advantage. You can reach him at 855-350-1015 or online at robsellsnj.com. True story, Rob sold my house in 3 days. I spent a lot of time in real estate. I'm a licensed broker in a few states, and I can tell you, Rob Dukansky is the best. We're happy to have him on board, Speaking Millennial. Our other big sponsor for 2018, CSI Group. The CSI Group, you can reach them at 1-800-TAX-LAWS or csicpa.com. This is a family business, but they've got locations all over New York and New Jersey. And I'm going to tell you, taxes are too complicated to go it alone. Don't think that you're going to go online and just plug and play and get it done. You don't want to have a letter from the IRS a couple years after you file your taxes and find out you made a big mistake. And the CSI Group will give you a free consultation. So all you got to do is call them at 1-800-TAX-LAWS and they will help you out. Remember, you don't know what you don't know.
There's a lot of really cool stuff about our new sponsor, Tito's Handmade Vodka. And I could tell you about all of it. I could tell you how great it tastes. I could tell you how it's the best way to relax after a hard day. I could tell you that it's distilled from corn, so it's gluten-free. I could tell you that it's made right here in America, in Texas. And not just Texas, the best part of Texas, Austin. It's the best part of Texas. I tell you the thing I love most about Tito's Handmade Vodka. They use old-fashioned pot stills and they taste test every batch. It's the same way that they make fine single malt scotches and high-end French cognac. Why is this amazing? Well, it's amazing because, as John F. Kennedy said, we don't go to the moon because it's easy. We go to the moon because it's hard. And this is a harder way to make vodka, but it makes for better vodka. That's why it's handmade vodka, and that's why you gotta go out and get Tito's Handmade Vodka right now.
I'm happy to talk about one of our sponsors, great sponsor, good friend, Vinny Brand, owns the Stress Factory in New Brunswick. The website is stressfactory.com. Vinny Brand runs one of the great comedy clubs, honestly, in the country. Not only does he have A-list comics coming in almost every single week, but the show is great. The food is fantastic. The staff, the service, there's parking right next door. If you've not discovered the Stress Factory in New Brunswick, you've got to get there. Go to stressfactory.com and buy your tickets. It's a great night out, reasonable cost, absolutely hilarious entertainment, great food and hospitality. Stressfactory.com.
Looking for a car, new or used? This is Jay Black to tell you there's no better destination than our friends at the Flemington Car and Truck Country family of brands, located on Route 202 and 31 in Flemington and at Flemington.com. Here you will find 16 automotive brands, plus over 500 available certified pre-owned vehicles to fit every budget. You'll get the financing, the trade-in value, and the credit you need, and dependable vehicle service maintenance that delivers peace of mind. Choose from Ford, Lincoln, Audi, Volkswagen, Porsche, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, Cadillac, Infiniti, Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, Ram, BMW, and Subaru. Shop them all, knowing every Flemington Car and Truck Country location has earned the coveted dealer-rated customer satisfaction award for 2017 based on your reviews. The Flemington Car and Truck Country family of brands, an honest, straightforward organization that has been satisfying customers for over 40 years. Family. Independent, not corporate. Visit any of their 8 dealership locations on routes 202 and 31 in Flemington or at Flemington.com.
All right.
Hey guys, welcome back to Speaking Millennial. I'm Bill Spadia here with Jessica Nutt and Jay Black. We have a special guest on this, which is, I think, episode 62, Jay.
62.
Unless we split the other one, then it's 63.
63. It's somewhere in the 60s.
All right. So, Jay, before I introduce our special guest.
Yes.
You went on a rant sometime around, Jessica, what did you say, 3 or 4 episodes ago?
Yep.
Like a really heavy rant about improv.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now you're a comic.
Uh-huh.
A very successful one.
Yes. I'm a...
bigger than a local comic.
I would say local works. Yes.
You're like local / regional. I'm a
regional. Regional
local
comic.
Local comic, Jay Black.
Yeah, that's right.
So you had a whole rant, and I'd have to go back and listen to it, which I haven't heard yet, because I never listen after we're done.
Yeah, it's good.
I leave it all in the field.
John, the podcast.
John, you have not heard Jay's rant on improv, but Jay took some great offense to the whole existence of improv.
Well,
go ahead, Jay. I'll let you explain. Now, let me introduce John Colby,
right?
Who I was introduced to, even though we've never spoken, by my friend Jennifer DaCosta.
Okay. You're,
who I've talked about, who worked for QVC.
Gotcha.
She's in theater. She's like, you've got to talk to John Colby. He's an improv guy. And I said, well, that's interesting because my co-host, Jay Black, has an honest issue with improv. So, anyway, go.
John, here's what happened. And I think you'll agree with me that I was hanging out with a guy and he said, what do you do? And I said, I'm a comedian. And he was like, oh, we have similar jobs. I'm an improv guy. And I was like, no. It's not similar. If this were the Army, right, I would be a Marine and you would be in the Coast Guard. You know, it's like, you know, it's not as hard to do improv as it is to do stand-up. But I think that's a natural fact that everybody knows.
I'm a host.
Uh-huh.
I do comedy. I don't call myself a comic,
right,
but I do comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think improv is very hard.
I think
you have to be witty and quick.
I'm not saying it's not hard. I'm just saying it's not as hard as stand-up. You know, it's like, it's hard to...
know.
It's hard to be a plumber, but it's not as hard to to be a plumber as it is to be an astronaut.
John, do you do improv or are you a professional improver?
I'm a professional improviser, yes. I've done improv for 20 years. I've done stand-up as well, actually. And I can tell you that people who think that one is harder than the other are just ignorant to what they both entail. I think people can be really good at stand-up and then really bad at improv, or vice versa. I know people who are professionals in both. I have a friend named Scott White out of Houston who tours the country doing improv and stand-up, and he's really good at both. And you'll hear more stand-ups diss improvisers and improvisers diss stand-up because improvisers work together, and our big phrase is, I got your back. We support you.
No one has my back.
Alone. And so you get this warped view of reality sometimes. So,
comics are like Black Widow spiders. They just devour one another. It's terrible.
Oh, God.
Exactly.
Well, end of podcast, everybody. Nicely done. Good job, John.
Thank you. I just solved the world's problems in 2 minutes.
So what was the main difference? Like, again, I don't remember, Jay. You had a whole line of reasoning that kind of made sense.
So my contention, because I do a Q&A at the end of my set when I do colleges, and that's all improvised. Basically, they ask the question. I kind of know what they're going to ask, but sometimes they ask me a curveball. And I feel just in the sense of the audience that, like, it's looser when they know what's coming off the top of my head. You know, they're like, okay, we'll give them a little bit more play. You know, it's like, it's basically like playing basketball. If you ever played street ball, you know, like how sometimes the rim is tight.
And I'm huge into street ball.
Never played. You run with my crew.
I don't play basketball.
Would you like to run with my crew, Bill? So I always feel like the improvers get a little bit more from the audience where they go, well, I'm going to give you a little bit more leeway because it's coming off the top of your head. Whereas stand-up, they sit there with their arms folded and they're like, all right, asshole, make us laugh. And you got to figure it out.
I definitely agree with you on that because there is that leeway because the thing is we are playing without a net. Like the thing is, if I can be funny in the moment, that's amazing. But if you can't be funny when you've had your entire life to plan for it, you know, I think that's the logic of stand-up.
Right.
I mean, I just saw Kevin Hart last week, your stand-up. And the thing is, like, I mean, it's tight and he knows what he's doing. I think you expect that. The thing is, I mean, I know if you've done stand-up, you've seen open mic, and you know open mic is awful 90% of the time.
It's a stomachache for 2 hours, yes.
It's dreadful. But the thing is, the same thing is true of, like, young, like, improv. And I think there are a lot more places. Over the last maybe 5 years, I feel like improv has blown up outside of the main cities where any city now has improv where you can go watch professionals, but they also have... Hey, come see my show on Tuesday night.
So, John, just so I understand it, so is it not prepared? I mean, I think about the comedy set when I open. You've got maybe 8 minutes, 5 to 8 minutes, and it's scripted in the sense of you know where you're going, but you do adjust to the audience.
No,
you know, like I do.
Not at all. Like if you're watching that's there's shows that some people do called an unscripted. And an unscripted will be like, hey, we're going to do like a Star Wars improv or whatever.
I've been trying to get my wife to do that for so long. She will not.
That's way different. That's whatever you two do. Nobody's judging you.
But no, people are judging heavily.
We're judging right now.
Yeah. No, we invite people over to hold up cards.
So I warned him that this would be a fight, by the way.
Oh, you did. You let John know.
You must defend your improv.
Yes, it's a friendly fight. There's no like, nothing's at stake here.
Right, yeah.
I was hoping to hear some improv. Am I the only one?
Is that, can you do that?
Can you do it by yourself? Or do you need other people? Is it like team improv?
I don't know. The reason I was...
Yeah, typically improv, that's the beauty of it. It's a team thing. And there are people who do like single person improv. I actually do a two-man show.
So both of you have to be good at it. Like you can't play one off the other. You can't have like a studio guest. Like could Jessica be the other side of your improvisation for this podcast?
You can do that. Actually, Tara DeFrancisco, who is...
I don't like where you're going with this, though.
She performs all over the world, Tara DeFrancisco does, and she does a show called DeFran and Co. And really, if you go to her show, when you walk in, you can put your license in a fishbowl. She'll pull one out and then you do an improv set with her.
I would hate that.
Yeah.
Would you do that?
Having to get up.
I don't even like sitting in the front.
I just think this is a front for ICE. I think they're just trying to find illegals.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
All my friends like going to improv. I don't really know.
Yeah. See, I think it's entertaining. Is it more geared toward millennials? Like, what's the audience like? Like, as with comedy, with stand up, it'll depend on the venue. Right, you do a casino, and the casino is going to be older. Mm-hmm. You do a comedy club in New Brunswick. Vinnie Brand, one of our sponsors at the Stress Factory, tends to be younger, depending on the comic, but tends to be younger because you've got Rutgers right there.
Yeah,
yeah, it's totally the same thing with us. I mean, if you do a show, I'm the artistic director of a theater in the suburbs of Indianapolis called Red Curb Comedy, and Red Curb is suburbs, so literally you'll get families and you'll get. Like on our Saturday night shows, you'll get bachelorette parties and stuff like that. So it can vary a lot.
That could be where the divide is. Because every comedian in the world hates bachelorette parties. They're the worst.
We can see there. We're finally on the same page.
There we go. See, everybody hates bachelorettes.
No, why though? Why, John? Why do you hate them?
Because they make everything about themselves. And they just yell and scream. And they're not there to be an audience. They're there to be the show. They're not good.
I went to a bachelorette party where I wasn't the bride, and we got so much attention.
Did you like it, though?
Yeah, it was great.
See?
It was so much fun.
Now I'm starting to understand this whole comic issue.
One drink. Like, people were just, like, waiting to buy us drinks because we were, like, a pack of girls.
Guys, because they're hitting on you, or just other women who are happy for you, or older people? Like,
by the way,
it was both. It was a mix.
Right? See that? It's not just like creepy guys hitting on the girls.
Yeah, it was girls too.
Right?
As a creepy guy who hit on girls, I would always tell my friends when I was
not all guys hit on girls are creepy.
No, I was. But I would say to guys, bachelorette parties, fool's gold. It looks like you're going to make some move there, but it's not going to happen. They circle the wagons and they protect
because they're all going back to whatever the
party. I got in an argument about this the other day. She said when you go to a bachelorette party, you're supposed to get, like we say, hoed up from the flow up. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But Jay said worse.
Like, she's like, it's the, you know, you dress a little different for a bachelorette party. I'm like, well, that's, why can't you dress like that when we go out? There was a debate on that, but I said it's the same thing. I'm like, but then you go out and you draw all this attention yourself, and again, guys start buying drinks, and then nothing happens.
Wait, so John, is this your girlfriend that said this, or your friend?
Just my wife.
Oh, okay.
What did your girlfriend say about it, though?
No, I don't talk to girlfriend. don't talk about her.
Right. No, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not in public.
All right.
Get hoed up. What?
Well, wait, was it hoed up from the float up? What did you say?
Hoed up from the flow up.
Well, no, but that's why it's fool's gold, because they do get hoed up because they're competing with each other to look good. And as a guy, if you're a creepy guy, you're looking in going like,
I don't think in Charleston there's going to be that.
I
picture like more traditional, like Southern dresses.
Yeah, Jessica's classy. She doesn't, you know, she's going to have a petticoat on.
They have little fans and they drink mint juice.
With like a little, the bonnet. Yeah. I'm picturing like a bonnet and the fan.
Fascinating.
You know what, right?
My present for Jessica. I'm getting her a fainting couch.
So you could just, there you go.
Just fall. Oh, Lord. If, you know, especially when Charleston True comes out as a reference.
See, I'm thinking John could improvise having the bachelorette crowd in front of him on stage.
I could improvise a lot of things to bachelorette crowds, but they usually get mad at me because I get angry that they're in my show.
Wait, so do the bachelorettes get up on stage at the improv? show?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are certain games that we can play or certain things that we can do where we end up pulling somebody up and trying to do an interview. But, like, it's kind of a general rule. You want to take a bachelorette up on stage to do the interview because it ends up taking twice as long as it should because, again, they're trying to make it all about them. And then everybody's like, yeah, Brittany, tell him about the whatever. And it just goes on for an hour.
Oh, Brittany talks so much.
When girls woo, nothing good happens. There's nothing good following a girl. Woo! No, you don't want to deal with that. That's just awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, Jessica? The last time you were wooing, I'm sure you were insufferable.
He mentioned bachelorette party, and I was like, woo, right off the top.
You did. Yeah. She wooed.
It's insufferable.
She wooed.
Yeah.
But Jessica's thinking about the sash she's going to wear.
Thanks for calling me insufferable.
But no, in that moment, not in general, just in that moment. I'm insufferable all the time.
So, Jay, you've got your hour set. The set evolves.
Mm-hmm.
With improv, what do you have? Like, are you just really well-read in pop culture?
I mean, you have your games, right?
What's funny, I'm 39, I don't know if I'm even allowed to be on your millennial show, by the way.
To be fair, Jessica's the only millennial on this millennial show.
That's right.
Jay and I are still trying to figure out, which is why we call it Speaking Millennial.
I'm 88.
Oh, okay, so we're trying to dissect them, not be them. I got it.
And Jessica steers us in the right direction when we go off stray.
Yeah. Yeah, we can tell when she starts Instagramming, you've gone off the rails.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Or sometimes you guys get too carried away and I can't.
Guys, I'm thinking one. I'm thinking Jay. I'm thinking Jay gets carried away.
Okay.
All right. So like, what's prepared? Give me a game.
Okay. So if we want to first of all, my bread and butter is musical improv. So like I said, I have a partner. We do a show called Dudesicle. It's two dudes doing a musical, not Dude Popsicle. That's way different. And we take a suggestion from the audience. We'll get like an occupation. We'll get an obstacle you have to overcome in life. We'll get something like that. And then we'll have a musician there who will start playing music, and we will literally make up a whole musical. So the two of us will play multiple characters,
So where do you draw from?
Two-person show. It's 30 to 40 minutes, and we make up a whole musical.
But, like, where's your brain going when it comes? Are you prepared for, like three or four options that you've practiced? Or is it just in your head, and you can show up anywhere and start playing and riffing on something?
Here you go. The idea is, at the beginning, in Philadelphia, they use what they call the platform. So that it's the who, what, and the where. So at the very beginning of the scene, you want to try and set up, like, where are we, what's going on? With musical improv, a lot of times we try and start with, at the beginning, you'll have an overture, the musical play, and that just lets us hear the music. And then we're inspired by, like, if the character, the suggestion's like plumber, right? All right, you start thinking about a plumber. Well, this plumber, is he just a plumber who's really good at his job, or maybe he's not good at his job, or maybe he's a plumber, but he's always wanted to be something different?
Maybe he's Christopher Plumber.
Or something like that. So you just make it up, and you just start going from there, and then the other person comes in. And that's what's so cool with improv, or compared to stand-up, is that you don't know what's going to happen. And so, I've done stand-up. Like I said, after you do stand-up, you're basically taking some jokes out and putting new things in, and you're trying new bits, and you're like tweaking your show constantly. Like, I get bored with that. I'm actually a theater teacher, a high school theater teacher. And I'm like, I would never want to be in a play again where you rehearse the same stuff for 6 weeks. Like, to me, it's new and different, and we're bringing in new references and new characters. Like, I can play.
So do you rehearse any of the characters?
No, not necessarily rehearse the characters. Like, whenever you're performing with new people, like, we have rehearsals, but the rehearsal is just to get you on the same page as far as timing and learning to trust other people, because some players perform really quickly, and so they're rattling off stuff, while other people, like, you'll learn that, I mean, stand-up knows this, some of the best bits are all about the pause and about the timing of the delivery. And if you're working with somebody who's really fast and somebody else it has that slow burn, if you don't get that timing right, you're basically either walking all over each other or you're leaving dead spots where the comedy can flourish if the timing is better. So you basically are trying to learn each other, not like pre-plan anything.
Yeah, you see, as a stand-up, I don't like the idea of sharing the stage or learning about other people in any way whatsoever. Yeah.
There was a time where we did the Bound Brook, and you had left, and I went on stage with Jay, and it was such a debacle. Do you remember
that? Was that the end of the show?
We really
I was going to the Stress Factory to finish up the show.
We did great.
We didn't have a plan.
It went fantastic. Jay told me it went great.
I thought it went
Jessica
fantastic.
Jessica told me, she's like, no, that wasn't good.
I was like, that was a mess.
Were you improvising? What were you doing?
Chatting to the audience, and they had a ball. Those people were delighted. I could see smiles and laughter, and I would say only about 40% of the audience was angry.
It was funny.
I'd say that's the majority. Bad. Yeah, 60% were loving it.
In politics, that's a good number.
Yeah.
It's a really good number.
I've heard you can win the presidency with less than 50% of the audience, Bill.
You're just mocking Clinton. So do you have characters that are like favorite characters?
I
hope somebody talks about the electrician so I can go into my bit.
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't have anything like that. Like, if I have, like, one of the first characters I ever invented is always special to me. So whenever, like, it, like, naturally will come into it, I have, like, a nervous kind of character who, in my brain, just, like, off the top of my head, he probably is, like, in his mid to late 20s and he still lives at home. He has the kind of profession, like, he's a sandwich artist at Subway, but he wants to be more. You know what I'm saying? But he's never going to be more. So like the
Subway's probably a rough direction to go these days after Jared. Right?
Yeah, you don't want to get too into the depths there with Subway.
Mm. Oh, sorry, didn't mean to.
Do you ever use this as foreplay? I think I would use characters as foreplay like all the time with my wife. Like I'd be like, I'm the gruff electrician. You know, oh, lady, this is going to be $300 to fix this. And she'd be like, oh, but I don't have $300. I'd be like, we're going to have to work something out. If you want electricity this weekend.
Let's just say there's a lot of pretend pizzas that get delivered to our house.
Yeah, there you go. Let it show up.
So that's a good question. The improv guy improvs at home.
I would imagine.
All the time. I mean, like my wife has never done improv and she swears that she'll never do it. But someday I vow that we will do a show together. We do it all the time where we're like making fun of something that happened that day or just like, it's a great stress reliever. And so we one of us will like role play the character of the person they dealt with so that the other person can say what they wanted to say to them. Like, wonder what that conversation would have been.
See, that could be funny.
I told her that she was stupid.
That could be funny.
Yeah. I'm not saying that improv can't be funny. My thing wasn't against improv as an art. It was just as a comparison. It was just like, it's like we were talking about. Like, one is being a sandwich artist at Subway, and the other is being like a chef at a 5-star restaurant. I mean, they're both in the same realm.
You could either be a sandwich artist or you could do improv. I get what you're saying.
Right.
There's food involved. You see what he did there?
The stand-up was the
stand-up was the Subway.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you not get that, Jay?
No, I didn't really.
You really
agreed with me because I'm quick and witty because I do improv. But if you'd had like a couple days to think about it, I'm sure you would have come up with something clever to respond with.
Probably not. I think I just would have
you've exhausted the limits of Jay's creativity.
I would have gone home and pretended to be an electrician.
So I try and bring out a little jab there, and you're like, yeah, you're right. I'm like, man, I forgot. Stand-ups are self-deprecating.
Yeah, we all hate each other. The only thing I hate more than improv is myself,
Bill. All right, let me ask you something, John. So are you as depressed as every other comic that we've met?
Oh, no, not at all.
See, that's improv is happiness.
Again, in stand-up, yeah.
This is what I've learned.
Traveling by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right, they're all sad, they're depressed, there's all kinds of antidepressants and booze and women, and it's just, it's amazing to look at this world and say, how did that happen?
My green room has a goblet of Wellbutrin in it, or else I don't go on.
Well, not fun, but it's an interesting topic to dive into because I've talked to people about this a lot too. I truly believe that whether people do stand up or they do sketch comedy like at Second City or something like that, or they do improv or whatever, they are people who love the spotlight. And so when they are on stage, they are in their element and they feel good. Unfortunately, most people do that like once or twice a night for an hour or two, and then they have the rest of their life to just not have that. And so I think a lot of people end up turning to drugs and alcohol because they don't have that. They get that high. And when they're not getting that high, I mean, you're not doing a show on a Monday night, then you start like having that crash and people look for other
ways. Yeah, but you can say the same thing about improv, right? You're on the stage once a night.
No, I said that. I said whether it's...
Oh, you said both. Okay.
Yeah, I think the idea of comedy is such a fascinating thing because it's like the whole Robin Williams thing. Like they make the whole world laugh. But then when they're not making the world laugh, true. It's like they don't feel like they have a purpose.
But John, you sound pretty well grounded.
Yes.
Because he's got that electrician character.
Because he's role-playing.
Yeah, I have Norman. No, I'm kidding. Because like for me, I've been doing improv for 20 years, and I think I went through those times where I was super like look at me, I've got to be funny. Look, hey, I'm not wearing pants. That's hilarious. But then I finally got to a point where I...
Take your pants off in front of the crowd.
Oh, no. Well, yes. Yes.
Early career, Jessica. Early career.
Well, it's a couple weeks ago, but that's different. It's just like you kind of hit a point where you're like, I'm either going to quit doing this or I'm going to stable out, I think. And I just never did drugs. Like, I don't even drink.
And I didn't have a there's your mistake.
Yeah.
I mean.
In moderation.
Yeah. I mean, or not.
I'm not a child when it comes to beverages.
I had one glass of wine the other night.
You did great.
How about that? One glass through the whole dinner. Well, because Jay doesn't drink and Pete's got leukemia.
Yeah.
So he's battling.
I'm going to start telling people I have leukemia so they don't give me any shit. It's like, why aren't you drinking? Leukemia.
I think you need a bigger backstory than that.
Yeah,
but no, he's got a whole story, and
I'll improv it.
You will improv it.
I was an electrician, and I got electrocuted and gave me leukemia.
Where can people find you, book you, social media, website? What do you got?
JohnColby.com, J-O-N, Colby like the cheese, just JohnColby.com. If you go there, you can. I do corporate trainings, and I basically, that's the other thing we never even got into. When it comes to improv, like, improv makes you a better leader, it makes you a better communicator. It does a lot of those things, so maybe that's what helped make me so grounded or whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, Barack Obama came out of Second City. A lot of people don't know that. He was at Chicago. He was, and Donald Trump, he was at the theater there. He was in New York.
Just stop.
No, it's true.
John give his plug.
All right.
JohnColby.com.
A lot of people don't know. Richard Nixon was a groundling.
You said like the cheese, but I don't think anybody knows. Like, I'm thinking of the cheese. Is there an E in the cheese? Like, the cheese could be spelled differently.
People say Kobe, like the basketball player. It's Colby. C-O-L-B-Y.
Colby. So JohnColby.com. What about Twitter?
It's just at JohnColby. But it also, if you live in any city, I don't know where people listen to this, but any city, look up comedy Everywhere. Sports with all one word with a Z at the end. Comedy sports is short form improv, and I don't know anybody who goes to a comedy sports show and doesn't like it. There's one in New York, there's one in Philadelphia. So
we'll tweet this out,
Bernie Sanders,
and we'll tag you.
Comedy sports.
What are you again? What are you on Twitter again?
Just at John Colby.
At John Colby. All right, cool.
Yep.
We'll tag you, and this episode drops in a couple weeks?
Yeah, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, somewhere in there.
All right,
It'll be the middle to the end of June.
Awesome. All right, man. Hey, John, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. That was an enlightening conversation. And Jay, I think we've cleared up some misconceptions about improv.
For sure. I feel like we've changed a lot of minds today.
It's what we do. It's like a public service.
It really is.
I'm sorry we can't hug.
Oh, no. Bill and I are hugging.
There's no hugging. I'm not a hugger.
We have not stopped hugging since the entire
you're
podcast.
You're mentally hugging, and it's making me uncomfortable. Your mental image of hugging is making me awkward. This place awkward.
Bill friend zoned me.
You are total friend. Boom. That's it. The wall's up, Jay. All right, John. Thank you, buddy.
Hey, guys. Have a good night.
Good to meet you. Take care.
Bye-bye.